The COVID-19 pandemic is rampant around the world and South Africans have and will not be spared. This is why we at Syntech are doing our bit to help in providing face masks and medical supplies in South Africa. Join our drive to supply 1 million face masks to the Department of Health and keep our health workers on the front lines safe. To find out more, you can go to our website at medical.syntech.co.za. Hello everybody and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast Remote. My name is Brendan Lotz and joining me on the line today is Robin Chetty.
Hey, how's it going?
And Clinton Matos.
Hello everybody.
So before we get into the podcast today, today we're actually going to chat about how we've been coping working remotely and how things have changed since the lockdown. But before we get into that, we just want to jump into a wee bit of news that you might find interesting. Today, or rather this week, Eskom announced that it will be doubling maintenance on, doubling short-term maintenance on its infrastructure. And that's because demand is way, way down. Eskom says that demand has dropped by between 7,500 megawatts and 9,000 megawatts since lockdown came into effect, and it's going to use this time to conduct maintenance. An important piece of maintenance is Kooberg Unit 2, the nuclear power reactor, that is being taken offline on Friday, the 3rd of April, and then is expected to be synchronized with the grid again on the 30th of April. However, Eskom has said that all of the infrastructure that is being taken offline for maintenance can be resynchronized with the grid at short notice, should it be needed. And I think that as we get closer to lockdown lifting, I suspect that demand will start to increase after lockdown has ended, or maybe even beforehand. So yeah, Eskom keeping the lights on, hopefully, and conducting maintenance during lockdown, which is good news. Clinton, you got some more local news for us.
Yes, I don't think it's as positive as your story. Basically, the University of South Africa, everyone just calls it UNISA for short, they have reported that one of their staff, a professor, has been tested positive for the coronavirus. Now, a lot of people were a bit confused by this news because UNISA, as many people know, is a distance education university. But despite that, they do actually have physical campuses around the country. And this news was actually predated for the 18th of March. They're only releasing it today, April 2nd, but this took place on the 18th of March. The official timeline is that the professor returned to the campus in Pretoria from the Western Cape, and on the 18th of March, he reported that he wasn't feeling well, and he's been booked off since then. And during the time between that happening and now, he tested positive for coronavirus. So that's kind of a developing story. We'll see what happens. The school has announced that the campus has been shut down. Obviously, apart from the lockdown, it's been shut down and it's been deep cleaned. And all of the staff and students that they came into contact with have been instructed on what to do. So you can see my story about that for more information. Basically, it's just another university has reported a positive coronavirus case.
And then, Robin, Zoom is being targeted, seeing as it's become more popular as people work from home.
Yeah, so I guess one of the applications that's benefited from the lockdown and the COVID-19 pandemic in general is Zoom. It's a video collaboration or video conferencing tool, if for people that are unaware, and it's being used a lot for collaboration, meetings, things like that. And yeah, it has increased in popularity significantly over the past few weeks. And as hackers often do, they're taking advantage of that fact. And Checkpoint, which is a cybersecurity research firm, have done their own bit of research into Zoom itself and found that hackers are actually using it as a way to send malicious attacks to users. So the main attack method at the moment is creating or rather registering domains that contain the word Zoom. So a lot of the time you'll find someone's working online, They might not necessarily have Zoom already on their system. They need to quickly download it for an upcoming meeting or some kind of session. A lot of the time, people don't necessarily screen or note what they're actually downloading from the internet, and that's kind of how these hackers are getting in. So as far as Checkpoint has seen, there have been 1,700 new domains registered since the beginning of the year, and 25% of them have been within the last week. So there's obviously been a large number of domains using the word Zoom that have been created. And to be fair, it's not only Zoom that has been targeted by hackers. The Checkpoint's research also found that Google Classroom was another one that was being used as an attack method, as it were. And as we know, a lot of tertiary institutions, a lot of schools in the country and across the globe are using Google Classroom now to facilitate learning. So yeah, that's just something for, I guess, people that are working from home and people that are studying from home to be aware of, that the online platforms that they are using to collaborate and conference on might not necessarily be secure. So they have to keep an eye out for those things. And Checkpoint have given us a whole bunch of different tips to look at during the lockdown. And it's containing one of our stories that we published this week. And we'll obviously we'll link to that as well at the bottom of the podcast.
Cool. It's very sketchy, but I think the advice is just to make sure that when you are downloading apps and stuff, that you are going to the official website. So go to the Zoom website to download your stuff. Don't go to like dodgy sites that also seem to have download files. Rather just go to Zoom. But although I do worry that also while these sites are inundated with users, if the website is down, people might be going elsewhere to look for these files. But I think just wait for those websites to come back online before you go to dodgy websites to download software. Right, so today we are shifting things up a bit. Rather than talking about features and interesting stuff we've seen throughout the week, we're actually going to talk about how we have transitioned to working from home, or rather how the transition to working from home has affected us here at Hypertext. And I think the best person to start off with in this regard is Robin, because you were actually working from WeWork for the majority of the time before the pandemic hits. So can you tell us a bit about that, like how you were, what your regular day would look like?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not too dissimilar from what other people were experiencing. So we were working out of the WeWork offices in Rosebank. So you're going to deal with your hellish commute as always. And the actual office setup was fine. I think it was about 2 weeks prior to the president announcing a national disaster. WeWork actually brought together all the members for a session on the ground floor, and those that obviously couldn't attend also, funnily enough, entered a Zoom session to actually find out what was going on. And they kind of explained to us the measures that they were taking, and they were not only doing from a global perspective, but locally as well. And that kind of hit home for me, just in terms of how serious COVID-19 should be taken. I think, like a lot of people, I was a bit skeptical just in terms of how much of impact this would have. But that session really hit home for me. And I think that session happened on a Friday. The following Monday, we brought all our team in, all the people that work in our office, to discuss what was going to happen. And we decided on the Tuesday from then onwards to work remotely. So that was kind of the shift we made. That shift was pretty easy to make. I think we're very fortunate in terms of the job that we do, that a lot of the tools and applications that we use are online, and the way we communicate is very much online. So in terms of transitioning, being able to actually work hasn't been that difficult. I think for a lot of other people, that might not be the case. And that's, I think, where a lot of the issues are now cropping up.
I mean, like you say, we use a lot of online tools as it is. So for us, the switch to work from home was really just a change of venue. I know, like myself and Clinton, we've been working from home for the majority of the time since 2017, roundabout.
In a while.
And I remember when we first made that transition, it was a bit sketchy, if I recall. I mean, we had to put stuff in place and measures and rules and stuff so that not only people stayed online, but so that we could remain productive online. Just from my perspective, I mean, I think the biggest thing for me since the lockdown came into effect is the stress of remaining online. Yesterday, I had a bit of an issue with my internet service provider. They gave me some advice that turned out to be very bad, and I lost my internet connectivity. And the one thing that was on the back of my mind was, okay, so what the hell do I do now? Because I can't go somewhere else. The signal here is not the greatest, or the mobile network signal is not the greatest where I am. So what do I do now was the prevailing thought. Luckily, we managed to resolve the issue, but like that's just something that's at the back of my mind constantly is, if something happens, if the power goes down, there is a generator, but if the generator isn't working, what happens then? And it's just trying constantly to come up with these mitigation measures, if you will, for any eventuality.
Yeah, like you said, Brendan, when the internet goes up by my house, I mean, I have a McDonald's just down the road.
Yeah.
And they have, it's not a lot of free internet, but it's enough for me to kind of write a story or update you guys on what's happening. And then I can actually buy internet from the service provider at McDonald's. So I always have a backup in that regard. And if that doesn't work, I can always go to a family member's house or something to use their internet. Mm. But I can't do any of those things right now because of the lockdown. And for those who don't know, journalist, or anybody who writes about the coronavirus or anything in that regard, is actually classified as an essential worker. But to get permission to drive on the roads to do those jobs, you need documents that we weren't able to obtain in time. So like the rest of South Africa, we are technically still essential workers, but we don't have the correct documentation to go out onto the road. So we would also be stuck if our internet just decided to turn off for some reason.
And I mean, we also wouldn't be able to just use those passes to just go to a family member's house, for instance. Yeah. We have to show that we are going to work or something. It's not like we could abuse that privilege.
Yeah.
It's just to give people a kind of perspective of like, okay, well, we can be classified as essential workers, but on the same token, it's kind of like, well, are we really, do we really need to be out in the field? Because like as tech journalists, we don't necessarily need to be out in the townships or in the cities to be seeing what the police are doing. We actually have it quite nice being able to work from home. Something I do want to chat about, just to give people an idea of, is the sort of software that we actually use, the apps and software that we use to remain in touch. So for text-based communications, we use Slack, but sometimes Slack doesn't play very well. I know in my experience, on mobile connections, Slack doesn't like anything less than 4G. If you don't have 4G, it seems to mess around a bit, like messages won't send or messages won't be received.
Yeah.
So
Slack just has a problem with mobile networks in general for some reason. I think I said some reason twice there. A lot of times you'll send a message on your phone and it will either not send, or my favorite is it sends it 10 times and you passively aggressively send your coworkers a message saying, I'll be 10 minutes late 5 times because you're stuck in traffic or something. So it's just weird. I don't know why that is. It just seems to play better on Wi-Fi.
Yeah. But as a fallover, we also, like, I have everybody on the company on WhatsApp. So we kind of use that as a backup, as it were. But yeah, Slack is kind of our primary means of communication. Although, I mean, there are times where sometimes you just need to call someone. And in that instance, thankfully, we still have mobile networks and the ability to call people. So it's easy enough to just pick up a call. Although, I do also want to mention every Monday, we have a stand-up meeting. It's not face-to-face. We aren't using Zoom and stuff like that because in the past, we've seen that video conferencing is kind of hit or miss in South Africa. I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but whenever I try and run video anything, it just doesn't seem to play very nicely.
So on Monday, I actually had a video interview. I don't want to say who it was with because it's
confidential.
I'm not under an embargo. It's just that I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a video interview with somebody over Skype originally, and 5 minutes before we were supposed to start, they sent me a message and said, Skype is just not working right now. So we used another app called Whereby, which I've never actually heard of before, and now it's just broken beyond belief. There was like a 30-second delay. People kept dropping out. It was just a nightmare. And I think because we're a smaller company and because our meetings aren't, you know, a dozen people, I think that also suits us better to just do a voice call. It changes if, you know, a lot of people are posting funny videos or whatever of them doing Zoom calls. That is when it's, you know, they've got a class of 20 people.
Yeah.
And if you did that by voice alone, it would be a nightmare. So I understand why people don't want to do voice only.
I would like to hear from the listeners / readers what their experience has been like using video conferencing in South Africa. Because I see a lot of companies are kind of insisting that there is video conference meetings happening. It just strikes me as a bit odd because a couple of months ago it was like, oh, well, we're never going to go online and work remotely. And now everybody's like, companies are demanding that you're able to have video conferencing. And I don't know if a lot of companies understand just how much bandwidth video actually takes. And I foresee a lot of people midway through this month kind of eating up their fair usage policies. And it does worry me that a lot of people are not cognizant of how much data and bandwidth video actually uses up. So maybe instead of having a Zoom video conference, consider just doing a voice call over Skype. Just some advice from us.
That's what we do. Because I mean,
yeah,
it really depends on the nature of the presentation or whatever meeting you're having.
Yeah.
We're just discussing what we're planning for the week or what's going on.
Yeah.
There isn't a need for video in those kind of instances. So yeah, again, I would also kind of side with you in terms of,
if you don't need to do video,
such a big presence, yeah.
Yeah, if you don't need video, rather just use a call. I mean, you can hear when somebody is paying attention on a call or not. I mean, and also, like with us, when we have our meeting on a Monday, sometimes that meeting happens while the story is being written or while breaking news is happening, and you kind of got to multitask. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think it's something that business owners need to be a bit mindful of in this situation. Like, I've seen some people on social media complaining about kids being audible in the back of video conferences. But I mean, guys, everybody's working from home now. Kids have to stay at home. They can't go anywhere else. So just a bit of understanding in that regard. I think it'll go a long way.
If it has to do with the fact that a lot of business owners or managers or I guess whatever the higher ups are referred to, like the visual aspect of actually seeing their employees and knowing that they're working. It's the old mentality
of wanting butts on seats, right?
It's
the dreaded phrase. Another word is used, but butts on seats is the more family appropriate one. I think, you know, I don't want to paint anyone in a bad light, but a lot of people are kind of stuck in old ways of doing things and they're used to being in control as a manager or a CEO or whatever. And when they can't like walk into the bullpen and see people sitting down doing what they're being paid for, it kind of freaks them out. And that's a big reason why there's been such a push against remote working. But now remote working is the only real way to work. They don't have a choice. They've kind of been pushed kicking and screaming into the situation.
So I just want to carry on with some more because we kind of got sidetracked here with the video conferencing stuff. In terms of workflow, we also use Trello. We have Trello boards set up for pretty much everything within the business, whether that's sponsored posts or stories for the day. And then we use Trello in tandem with Slack to kind of alert people. Hey, I need a story edited. Hey, I need somebody to check over this. Hey, I've got an idea for something. What do you guys think? And that kind of helps us manage our workflow a little bit better, gives us an idea of when stories are going out. What features people have planned for the week, what reviews we have in the timeline, all that sort of stuff. So Trello is really nice for that, but there are quite a few workflow applications. And I think in this time, it's kind of a case of what suits you. Trello works for us, but I've seen other companies use a program called Asana, which is similar to Trello, but has different features, has different benefits to it. So it is really a case of shopping around and finding a solution that matches your needs. I have written a story about software that you can use to work remotely that'll make it a bit easier for remote workers. We'll link to that at the bottom. And then in terms of just like document management and stuff, I don't know about you guys, but a couple of years ago, I lost some files on my desktop. My computer crashed and I lost a whole bunch of files. Some of them were really important files that I was working on. And since then, I have made the switch completely to working in the cloud. So any features and stuff, I use G Suite. That is something that the whole of Hypertext use. We use Gmail as our primary email provider, or G Suite rather. Just because it's in the cloud and it's easily accessible from anywhere. I mean, there's been times where I've been in Cape Town away from my PC, or my laptop has died and I need to check an email for an event or something. And it's just so much easier to be able to access that stuff on your phone. Even if you're not logged in, I don't have to jump through 50 different hoops to be able to access my email, which is really nice. But G Suite is really great in terms of being able to collaborate on documents, work on documents together. But by far the best feature of G Suite is being able to synchronize Google Drive from my smartphone without having to plug it into my computer and go through a file tree that's 20 files deep to find the photos I've taken for a review. That is by far the best thing in the world for me, is being able to just transfer files wirelessly. There are other ways, obviously. I mean, you can use the Your Phone app for Samsung and Windows. You can literally just plug in a cable if you want. But I find that it's just so much easier for me to take a few photos on my smartphone, add them to Google Drive, and then upload them to the site from there, which is really, really nice. Anything else that you guys want to mention in terms of software that you find really useful?
So I'm kind of forced to use the Microsoft Office suite, not for work, but actually for studying again through UNISA. I don't know why I'm saying I'm forced. So I have the student version of the Microsoft Office suite, which includes OneDrive. So basically I work through the regular MS Office and then that gets, MS Word, and then that gets synchronized to OneDrive. But that thing is not at all reliable. I mean, we just had that internet cable break, WACS, and that was making working on that stuff an absolute nightmare. I really don't like how it's implemented into Windows and how that works. So much of the time when I was stuck with that, I was just thinking, man, I wish this, I was just in Google Docs or something. But I understand, like me, people might not have a choice of where their files are. The company might just make a big decision of where they go. But I just wanted to bring that up. That's what I have to use. Like 80% of the time, it works fine. But that 20% is really irritating. And I always, always keep a physical copy, or not a physical copy, sorry, a local copy of everything on my computer. You don't want to be stuck with your pants down, right?
Yeah.
Keep backups of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're working from home now. Backups are pretty much essential. Oh, and then one more thing I didn't mention is Discord, which is what we're actually using to record this podcast right now. Or not actually record it, but to communicate with each other. So the reason we use Discord, just to kind of give you a bit of insight, is we tried doing it on Skype. But as Clinton mentioned earlier, Skype is very hit or miss most of the time. There's times when even during our weekly meeting, people will cut out while they're talking mid-sentence. But we found that Discord, also because it has a local server, is a lot more stable for purposes of this podcast. It's not always stable. There are obviously some issues that arise now and then. But generally speaking, Discord is really nice. And then just on a sort of personal note, having Discord open every night, I use Discord to chat to my mates. Because we can't see each other physically. So every night we hop onto Discord, play a few games with each other if people are in that mood, or otherwise it's just a catch-up session to chat to people, which is really, really nice. It might not be video or house party or stuff like that, but it's a nice way to just stay in touch with people without going insane.
And the audio quality on Discord is just so much better than Skype.
Yeah. I don't know how they did it. I really don't know how they managed to do it. But
I don't understand how Skype made itself so bad. You know, people like to look at it in the direction of, wow, Discord really has their stuff together. But I look at it in the direction of, how can Skype be so bad? I don't understand. It's been around for so long, and it's still so bad. Again, I was forced to use it the other day, and we sometimes use Skype at work here just because of circumstances. I don't want to get into it. But sometimes you are stuck using Skype, and Skype is just such a miserable experience every single time. I don't want to, you know, bang on about this too much, but man, Skype is bad. If you're stuck in a company where people are like, no, I want to use Skype because I've used Skype all my life, please just try your best to convince the powers that be that they should at least try Discord out.
Yeah.
Audio quality is so much better.
And it can be, you don't need to install anything. You can just access it through a web browser. So yeah, Discord is really great for voice comms. I'm really enjoying it so far.
Should be burnt to the ground.
So I want to chat about any challenges you guys have had in the past week since lockdown began. Any issues that you've come across as of yet?
Well, luckily the power stayed on.
So, yeah, thank goodness.
That hasn't been an issue for me yet. I know that whenever it goes above stage 2, that mobile network connectivity goes to edge. And I just can't work like that.
Yeah.
So I haven't been forced to, I don't know, try a different plan yet. I am quite concerned that if we do get a some kind of load shedding, that I will not be able to work at all because obviously I can't leave the confines of my home.
Yeah.
At the moment. Yeah. So that's a real concern. I think the only challenge I've experienced thus far is an odd one. I don't have a printer at home.
Yeah.
Normally because I'm at the office and WeWork, luckily enough, has printing services available. The first week I was on lockdown, though, I found that I actually had to start printing out documents, you know, to sign NDAs or yeah. approve leave and stuff like that. I just didn't have those services available. So that was one challenge. I essentially had to tell people that, you know, God's honor, I will not break NDA. Kind of
so, yeah, Robin, do you know what? I actually had that problem. I actually have a printer now just because I need to print stuff for my parents. But before that, what I did is when I needed to do my signature in a form, either for work or it was actually for UNISA, because every time you submit an assignment or anything like that to the school, you actually need to provide... It's not technically an affidavit, but it's a declaration that whatever you're submitting is your own work and it wasn't plagiarized. And that needs a signature. And I was like, I'm not going to take out a piece of paper, scan it, and then put that into my computer. So what I do is I just pop open MS Paint. I do my signature with the pencil tool, and then I insert that into the document. And then, you know, whenever you need to do, you know, fill out your name, your surname, and all of that, you can just enter that with MS Word. And then you just put your signature as an image into the file. And
so there is another way. There is another way I just want to mention to people. So what you can do is what Clinton suggests is go into MS Paint and then as best you can try and recreate your signature in MS Paint. However, there's another way you can do it. You can also take a photo of your signature. And then what you can do is Windows 10 comes with Paint 3D. What you can do with Paint 3D is you can essentially take your signature off of the white background and put it on a transparent background. So the reason this is important is then essentially what you can do then is take your signature, add it to Adobe Acrobat Reader, and then whenever you want to sign, you can literally just click a button that says sign. And it'll insert your signature as a PNG, so it's transparent. And you can drag your signature to anywhere on the form. So if you are finding that you need to sign stuff and you can't at the moment, there is a tutorial actually that I'll link to the bottom of this post for folks that you can follow to get a digital signature that you can use on PDFs, which is a nice
way. I'm always concerned though about keeping that kind of information on my computer. Like, obviously. I'm not like a Tito Imbo. I'm not like signing off big documents or something like that. But to always keep that kind of information digitally, I always worry about that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as, like, I mean, I keep that stuff on my computer, I mean, and stuff remains logged in on my desktop.
Yeah,
on
I was going to say, Robin, if you signed an NDA and then emailed them it to somebody, if somebody had physical access to your PC, they're going to have access to that email anyway, and then they can just get it from there. I don't want to give anyone ideas. I just want to, like,
well, now I know what you're going to do if my stuff gets stolen.
Yeah. But yeah, just, I mean,
put passwords on everything, guys.
Yeah,
even on your home PC, even if you live alone,
yeah,
still put a password on it, just like a short one.
Yeah,
it doesn't take you a long time.
Exactly, passwords are very, very good, even for your own stuff. Because if you fall asleep and somebody's trying to hack into your computer and you've logged off, big brain plays, guys. Big brain plays. In terms of challenges that I've had, I think the major challenge that I've had is less with us working from home and more with other companies working from home. That's not to say that they've been bad, because we deal with a lot of PR agencies and government organizations, spokespeople, distributors, suppliers, whole bunch of people. But I think the first few days of the lockdown was really testing for these companies, because whenever I called somebody, it was always, well, we're just trying to get things ready, I'll get back to you as soon as possible, we're just trying to transition to working from home and we'll be with you as soon as possible. So I think it was a challenge to kind of get in touch with people as the transition was happening, because we only had, what, 3 days to kind of make the transition to working from home. So it is understandable, but it did kind of showcase how little thought was put into working from home prior to this. Because as you say, because many people were so stuck in the old way of doing things that it was a matter of, well, I mean, we don't want to work from home. We're never going to work from home. Get used to it. And now it's like, well, you have to work from home if you want to continue making money.
Yeah, these companies didn't have plans in place.
Absolutely.
They thought they'd never want to do it.
I mean, I've seen reports in the past couple of days of, like, CEOs turning themselves into potatoes on Zoom because they don't know how to use the...
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Because they don't know how to use the interface of Zoom. And it's kind of funny, but it's also kind of telling that these folks didn't know how to use these applications. And now that they have to work from home, you can't ask Jeff sitting in the office to, can you just help me with this? Because Jeff is on the is probably having the same issues as you right now.
Well, the IT guy is like getting the same call from 100
people. From 100 people. And he's like trying to explain remotely. And anybody who's ever done any sort of tech support remotely will understand how tricky it actually is. At the weekend, I had to conference call with my parents and my brothers to kind of help explain to them how to set up an Android TV box. And that was a journey, let me tell you. What a journey.
I don't envy you, but...
It was... Wow. Wow. Anyway, but yeah, I think it was telling to see how many folks had just never thought of working from home, put things in place. And even when... I just think back to when we were working in an office, Clinton, you'll remember this. We were always on Slack. I mean, folks would chat in the office, obviously, but most of our business happened over Slack.
Even though we were all in the same room, we still talked on Slack. Because, and let me just paint the picture to everybody. I used the term bullpen earlier because that's what we used for the kind of newsroom at our old office. It wasn't big. It was like, I don't know, less than 10 by 10 meters. It was a small room. And even though we were so close to each other physically, we still talked on Slack, because I don't know, if you want to ask someone, hey, where's the document? It's just quicker to do it on Skype.
Yeah, or Slack.
On Slack. I don't know what's wrong with me. Yeah? It's just sometimes quicker and easier to do it over text. And also, if you like want to make a joke or post a link to something funny in the random channel, it's just quicker and easier to do it there than to say it in real life.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds very antisocial, but it's also a nice way of having a chain of, oh, I asked you to do this, did you do this? And then the person can be like, yes, I did, because you did ask me on Slack or whatever. Like, it's a nice way to have a record of a conversation, as it were, if... Like, that is something that your company is worried about. But yeah, I mean, I think it was very telling to see how many companies were prepared for this and how many companies had to scramble to put measures in place to be able to chat to people. and keep contact with people over time. I know a couple of friends of mine, one of them had been working from home for a little bit, and the other person is actually working in the retail industry, and they've had to now transition to working from home, and it's quite strange to see how restrictive their bosses are on what is happening. I mean, for us, for instance, if one of us wants to take lunch, we literally just message between ourselves and go, hey, does anybody mind if I take lunch at this time? And if somebody's got something on, it'll be like, no, sorry, I'm really busy at the moment. Can you take it in like 30 minutes or whatever? But with some of these companies, it's just super restrictive. Like, you must be online at this time. You must do this. Lunch must be taken at this time. It's just like, okay, cool. You're not in an office anymore. So maybe ease off on the micromanagement just a little bit.
It defeats some of the flexibility that you now have. I think people are kind of looking at needing to work remotely as, I don't want to say a punishment, but they're kind of looking at it as, I don't know, a less efficient way of doing things. And they're not leaning into the reasons why this is so good and why so many companies have chosen to go this route before the lockdown and before the need for quarantine.
I think it's also that mentality of you're at the office for 8 hours a day, you will work for 8 hours. But I think if managers took a step back and went, okay, so 8 hours a day somebody is at the office, are they really working for those 8 hours? Like from 8 until 5, is that person sitting down and all 8 of those hours are being consumed by work? And I think you'll find that the answer is no. You'll find that the people are having conversations with people at the water cooler or going off to make coffee and all that sort of stuff. And I think that as people work from home more, as we get deeper into this lockdown, people are going to start to realize, hey, you know what? I don't actually need to be working those full 8 hours at a time. As long as I'm online and available, I'm not trying to tell people to do the wrong thing here, but I'm just talking from my experience, is that I've noticed in my own experience that 8 hours a day is a lot of time to be spending just doing work. So there will be moments where I'll be like, okay, I'm going to go make a cup of coffee, step away from my desk and make a piece of toast or whatever. And I'm gone for 10 minutes at a time, but you wouldn't even notice that I'm gone because I'm still working. I'm still here. I'm still active. I'm always in contact. It's just a matter of, I might be working for 7 hours a day, not the full 8 as people in offices often do. I think it's just a case of people taking a step back and going, right, well, everything is changing. Is the 8 hour workday still necessary?
4 day work week, dude.
Yeah, 4 day work. But for me, I'm just also starting to see a lot of people that whose jobs could allow them to work flexi hours. You know, you don't need to be online from 8 until 5 because it's not really what your job demands. Perhaps it would be better for you to just make up 8 hours throughout the day. I think that the whole world of work is going to change dramatically in the next couple of months following these global lockdowns that we're seeing.
And do you guys think locally, though, a lot more companies are going to be embracing remote working? Because I think, like you said, the employees are realizing that they can actually work remotely relatively effectively, provided the connectivity is there and the power is there.
Yeah, I was going to say the two big things that are stopping South Africa from doing that is data prices. And, you know, I don't want to insult my country and make such a broad generalization, but in a lot of ways, South Africa is still very stuck in the old ways of doing things. We have very outdated mentalities in a lot of ways when it comes to work, especially when it comes to work. So if you're just a general schmo and you want to work from home, you now have to sort out fast, reliable internet. Having an internet connection in South Africa that can sustain even like, I don't know, 360p video calling is going to be a fast connection, and it's going to be an expensive connection. And, you know, Brendan, you've been writing the story about how little Cell C is doing to support their customers at the time. They wanted to offer people, and this is still a developing story, but right now it looks like Cell C is saying, hey, we'll be very generous. We'll give you 250 kilobytes of information. Now, a lot of people, they might not be technically savvy, 250 kilobytes isn't even enough to load most web pages.
Yeah.
Even web pages that have no...
2 JPEGs, maybe.
Maybe.
I think the like homepage of Wikipedia, which is just an image of the Wikipedia logo in a search bar, is like 100 kilobits. Mm. So so when people look at that and they say, okay, you know, I might be spending money to go to work every day, but if I have to now pay for an 800 rand internet connection at home, where am I going to find that in the budget? You know, maybe for people that can come from the money they're paying for
transport.
Yeah, thanks, Brendan. I just couldn't find the word. Maybe the money can come from there.
But even then, Clinton, you got to look at the issue of coverage, because not everywhere has fiber connectivity.
Yeah.
Not everywhere has 4G coverage. I mean, those I think are also important factors to consider. I mean, can we just go around here quickly and just say how fast? So my internet connection is a 20 megabit per second fixed wireless connection. Clinton, what are you using at the moment?
I have 20 up and I'm supposed to, 20 down and I'm supposed to have 2 up because that's what I pay for. Mm. But most of the time I have 20 up as well. I'm not sure. I think Web Africa kind of had my account slip through the cracks. So yeah, 20 down, 20 up. It is fiber.
And Clinton?
But for a long time, I didn't have fiber coverage. I only got this last year. So yeah, 20 up, 20 down.
And Robin?
100 up, 100 down.
Okay. Oh my God.
Like just going around the room, each of us have a 10, at least 20 megabit per second connection, right?
Yeah.
And like, I mean, just from my experience, streaming video is very difficult. When I'm watching Twitch, I have to set that down to 360p. Streaming video on Netflix is sometimes a little bit of a chore. Like, video requires a lot of data. The service, just for instance, my average daily usage of data, just for a normal work day, comes to 2 gigs. And that is just for work. 2 gigs of data. With Vodacom's adjusted pricing, that means I'm spending 200 rand a day, 1,000 rand a week, just on data for work. And that's to be connected, nothing else, not watching videos. And a lot of our job does involve watching videos, not watching live streams, and that's a no entertainment on my part. 2 gigs of data a day. Now,
yeah, sorry, I just want to add, Brendan, before we go further, you were only asking about speed.
Yeah.
I think all of us have an uncapped account, which yes. means that we can use not an infinite amount of data, but according to the fair usage policy of our internet service providers. So when we load up a web page, we don't need to worry in the back of our minds, oh, how many megs is this web page? We can just go ahead with our jobs. And a lot of people don't have that. They need to worry about how many gigs they're using.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think this is it's going to change the way people work, number one. But also, there needs to be ways for people to do their work when they are at home. But also beyond that, I think a lot of people just don't like working from home. I've seen a lot of people saying that the loneliness is starting to get to them. And I remember the first few weeks that I worked from home, that was a real concern for me, was that I was basically alone for 8 hours a day, and the voices in your head start to get very loud at that point. So it isn't something that it is for everybody. A lot of people do want that social interaction and want to be able to work in an office with colleagues. But yeah, I think it's on that, it showcases just how different everybody is, and the need for an 8 hour workday in a central office may be a thing of the past. I mean, we might have a virus to thank for it, ironically. So I just want to finish up and kind of talk about what working from home means for us, Hypertext, in terms of the content we're producing. Has it changed the type of content we're creating? Is it changed how you look at like news stories? Yeah, I'm interested to hear what you guys think. Let's start with you, Robin.
So I think just in terms of content, obviously there's a lot more focus on being able to work remotely, what different companies are doing to enable that for people. We also done a lot of stories, I guess, around how service providers are assisting in that regard. So I think I guess there has been a slight shift in terms of the angles, kind of focusing more on how remote working is being enabled in the country, or in some respects how it isn't. So yeah, I think that's just in terms of the content. I think on a personal level, not a lot has changed. I think obviously from our side, there'll probably be less reviews and stuff like that, purely for the fact that we can't get the hardware in at the moment. So that's probably the only real big change in terms of content. But I think a lot of the stuff we have been doing will continue being there. And the content, the type of content is kind of shifting slightly.
So from my, sorry, Clinton, go ahead, Clinton.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, so from my side, something that I'm actually really enjoying is the amount of live streams that are happening, into both from government and from companies. Last week or the week before, I sat in on a MTN conference that was streamed live online. And beyond that, just the statements from governments, the news channels, so SABC News or Digital News, ENCA, Newsroom Africa, all of those news channels have done a sterling job of having live streams up of the important statements that are being made by governments. And for me, that is fantastic, because prior to all of this, it was like pulling chicken from its teeth to get digital statements from government. For instance, if Ramaphosa made a statement on Monday night, you would expect that a copy of that speech to be uploaded 2 or 3 days later. Now, since COVID-19, those speeches are up online within the hour. Statements from Zwelle Mkhize are all online as soon as the statement is finished being made in person. So just from a standpoint of content, it's made it a lot easier for us to keep our readers and South Africans informed about what's happening, because we have easier access to these documents and to these statements that are being made. Whereas prior to this, it was kind of a case of, oh, hey, I need to reach out to this PR person for the 50th time today to ask them to please send me a copy of the speech, or I have to wait for government to upload the speech online, and that can take up to 24 hours or longer. So from a content perspective, it's become a lot easier to create content in terms of verifiable and accurate information from government regarding COVID-19 and that sort of stuff in the interim.
So what I found is that, I don't know if this affects my work, but it's just kind of been a shock that people come to me and ask, you know, what should I use to do this? But to me, that's kind of a foregone conclusion, because I've been doing this for 4 years. We've been working from home. So it's just kind of been a shock that people need this assistance, these pushes in certain directions, when it's something I've been doing for so long that I don't even think about it anymore. And I hope I don't come across like an a-hole there. It's just been a surprise to me that people have been working in such a different environment to me. And now that kind of affects how I write things, where I'd say, you know, just go to Discord and do this, where I might want to give more context there, saying, you know, go to Discord and use this. If you've not used Discord before, here's a good starter guide on it. So it's just been, it hasn't been a change so much for me as it's been a shock how much it's been a change for other people.
Yeah, I think it's going to continue to change as well. I think as we get further into lockdown, I think a lot of things are going to change. We don't know what the future holds as well, because the states of disaster, as far as I'm aware, was set to last for 90 days. I don't know if the lockdown overrides that 90 day, but it's unclear at this point. So I think, if you are not working remotely at the moment, or your business hasn't made the switch, I think it's something that you should seriously consider. If not because the future is uncertain, but because, hey, people are doing it and companies are still seemingly ticking over. So yeah, it's the way the world is going. I know we've been talking for a long time at this point, but I do want to kind of break off here. We had a sit down with the co-founder of Syntech, Ryan Martin. Why would I be talking about Syntech at this time? I can't order any electronics. So the reason that we're talking to Syntech is because since this lockdown was announced and since COVID-19 became a real worry for many, many people. I'm not saying that it wasn't always a real worry, but rather that in the greater scheme of things, people began to take notice of it. Syntec actually made efforts to get masks into the country. So those are your surgical masks and then the N95 respirator masks. We're going to chat to Ryan Martin about these masks and what Syntec is doing and how they are bringing these into masks or these masks into the country. And then you can find out as well how you can contribute and donate masks to the Department of Health and the healthcare workers that are on the front line. So hang tight. We're going to cut way to that right now. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz, and today we've got a bit of a special interview for you. We will be conducting the interview over Skype, given the current lockdown conditions here in South Africa. So it's a pleasure to welcome on the line Ryan from Syntec, the co-founder of Syntec. How's it, Ryan? How are you doing?
Good, Brendan. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thanks so much, Ryan. Ryan Martin, co-founder of Syntec. So obviously this lockdown in South Africa has kind of disrupted a lot of businesses. I know that Syntec, you guys deal with electronics brands predominantly, or tech brands rather. How has the lockdown kind of affected your guys' business?
So Brendan, leading up to the lockdown, we were really busy. I think a lot of companies realized the need to set up home offices, and a lot of our infrastructure products could be used to assist with that. So we were really, really busy right up until the last day, and then it all kind of came to a crushing halt. So at this point, there's not a lot we can do. I understand that there are limited products in our portfolio that we can continue to supply based on the fact that they will support working from home. There's a lot of uncertainty and also a lot of uncertainty of which of our customers and resellers are able to assist the market at this point.
Absolutely. And I mean, I suppose the supply chain has also been disrupted because of this. Even though I know that there is provisions for essential workers, I'm sure that getting stuff around is a major concern for companies at the moment. It's good to hear, though, that you guys made plans to have people working remotely. And while you're not selling electronics at the moment or distributing electronics, the purpose of today's interview is kind of to make a bit of noise about what you guys are doing. And in recent weeks, you guys have taken to distributing medical supplies or donating medical supplies. Could you give us a bit more information about that?
Yeah, sure. So it's absolutely not our core business, but we've been watching the situation of COVID-19 unfold in China over the last 3 months. And it's been like watching a horror movie in fast forward. So if everything that is starting to take place all over Europe and now starting to happen in South Africa was happening in Wuhan and other parts of China over the last couple of months. And as a business, we felt it was necessary for us to start securing some masks in particular for our own staff. And we started investigating this and then realized very quickly that the problem was way bigger than what we could handle and what our requirements were, and felt the need to get involved and assist with the supply of equipment to South Africa as a whole.
That's really, really awesome. So how are you guys going about this? How are you doing the distribution? Are you importing from other countries? Are they being locally sourced? Maybe if you could just explain a bit more about that, where you guys are sourcing the market.
Sure. Absolutely. So we've learned a lot about this over the last couple of weeks. There are local suppliers and manufacturers of masks, and I think that they are just inundated with demand and requests. Obviously, this is an unprecedented requirement globally. So our local manufacturers haven't been able to assist. We found that in China, because technology factories are traditionally such clean environments and used to work on nanometer technology, they've also made an ideal platform for factories to convert to the manufacture of medical equipment. So some of us have already transitioned their production lines to be able to cater for the global demand. And our business focus has been to try and identify the most reliable factories, the best quality, and obviously the most competitive products. So pretty much all of the stock that we are sourcing at the moment is coming from China.
Fair enough. I mean, we've seen, just on the point that you made, we've seen Sharp kind of turn around its operations and manufacture face masks. Razer, who makes mice and keyboards, usually has done the same thing. So it's really cool to see these electronics companies kind of pivot in this time and use their factories for something good, which is really, really nice. Something that I really wanted to touch on is we've seen a lot of price gouging in recent weeks, whether because supply is low or whether it's companies trying to earn a faster buck. But one of the things that Syntec has done is selling these masks as close to cost price as possible. How are you managing to do that? I know you mentioned that you're sourcing the most competitive pricing, but how exactly are you getting that right?
Okay, so even our prices are not as cost effective as we would like. And the simple reality is at this time, there's just been an exponential increase in the cost of operating. So the dollar cost and the production facilities have needed to gear up and buy additional equipment. So the actual cost of production is increased on these items. There's also very few international flights that are available. So that's meant that the cost of freight in getting the products to South Africa has gone up. And traditionally, there have been 20% duties on all masks that have come into the country, which has also factored things into. So our prices are as best as we can deliver to the market. They're as affordable as we can make it. And the way that we're doing it is we have a team of Syntec employees that are based in South Africa as well as in China, and our staff in China are actually working directly with the factories. So they're cutting out the middleman and all of the traders that are trying to supply masks and make profit off this. We've also decided, even though Syntec is a distributor and we really believe in supporting our resellers and our channel, a decision was taken to make the medical equipment available to anybody that wants to buy. And the reason for that is we wanted to create awareness in the market of the affordable prices, cut out the resellers and the traders that are just trying to hike up prices and make massive profits in the situation, and to try and create a marketplace availability at affordable prices for the country. So by cutting out unnecessary players in the chain, we were able to get products to the market as quickly as possible, and also to remove unnecessary players that could slow it down and add additional margins to the products. As a business, we're geared for importing, we're geared for distribution and stock holding, so it was very easy to migrate some of our essential services, our standard processes, over to supporting essential services. And then because we're buying in bulk and we've got established relationships with all the clearing agents, I think we're able to bring the products to market at pretty aggressive pricing. As a business, we've also made a decision not to try and profit off the situation. And there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of costs that have propped up that we haven't been aware of, and we've tried to navigate that as best as possible. But wherever possible, if there are any savings or regulations changes to allow us to drop costs, those savings will be passed on to the consumers as well.
That's awesome, Ryan. I mean, it's so nice to hear you saying stuff like that. Like, we've seen so much bad, for want of a better word, juju from companies in recent weeks. You saying that you're trying to get people masks in the most cost-effective way as possible, as quickly as possible, it's really heartwarming. I know that phrase has been overused in the past weeks, but it's really nice to see a company such a big company such as yours actually trying to do as best as they can and not just making the minimum effort. So something I do want to touch on is that earlier this month, we wrote a bit of a story about this. And for every 2,000 masks, you'll donate 200 masks to the Director General of Health. Is that correct?
Yeah. So maybe I can talk a little bit more about where we see the real need in South Africa.
Yeah.
And the simple reality is that the private sector and people that are well off can afford to buy masks, but there's many, many people in this country that just don't have access to them and can't afford them. South Africa as a country, we're unfortunate to have a really high percentage of our population that suffer from AIDS, TB, diabetes, and several other health issues, which make them a hell of a lot more susceptible to this virus and to And I think we're really at risk. Our medical infrastructure isn't really as strong as we would like, and there's absolutely no ways we can say that there's available excess funds to just ramp up supply and pay for all the supplies that we need at this point. So it's really everybody's responsibility to get involved, and I think, you know, it's ironic, but staying at home is actually making a difference, and by doing nothing, many of us are actually making a real difference. Yeah. But Syntec and the corporates out there, I think it's our responsibility where we have power to make a difference. We've got to take that responsibility. So we still believe that the private sector has a role to play in this, and they're in a position to invest in medical equipment and hopefully donate as well. And when we talked about this as a team, we decided it would be really powerful to be able to leverage off the ability for the private sector to invest in this equipment and use those investments to fund donations to the Department of Health. So our idea is quite simple. We factor in a 10% into the cost of the products that we're selling on our website, and that is really used to fund this initiative, where we can use those proceeds to pay for an additional 10% of the masks as a donation to where they need them most. So really, what happens is when the stock arrives, for every 100,000 units that are sold, we keep back 10,000 units, and we make sure that the Department of Health says send them to this location, and our clearing agents and couriers just direct them those parcels to where they need to go.
Cool. And so I also just want to clarify, what sort of masks are you guys distributing? Are they the N95 masks with the respirator on them, or are they the medical face masks?
Okay, so it's probably worth mentioning that these are really needed for the medical professionals and the people that I think the real heroes that are dealing with all the sick people and caring for those infected at the moment. Mm-hmm. So we've decided not to make any N95 respirators or any medical grade equipment available to the public.
Okay.
We are looking at bringing them in, but our decision has been that unless we can be guaranteed that the supply will go directly to a medical institution or for the use of medical professionals, those products need to be reserved for that market. So the products that we are supplying are a 3-ply medical mask. It's very similar to the ones that you'll see surgeons and anesthetists wearing on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. They do not save you or protect you from getting the virus. And in fact, they are really useful to stop the spread of the virus from infected people. Mm-hmm. So only if you are sick or have symptoms or perhaps caring for somebody that is sick should you be really using them. We also think that any of the retailers and the grocery stores where cashiers are handling money and dealing with people on a day-to-day basis mm-hmm. should potentially be wearing them, because that really mitigates the chance of spreading. So those are the masks that we've got available on our website, and it's really designed to mitigate the spread of the disease, not to protect people from getting infected.
Ryan, I just want to jump in here. To all our listeners, this advice that Ryan is giving us right now is actually directly from the World Health Organization. They advise the exact same thing, is that you should only be wearing a mask if you are sick or caring for somebody who is sick, or you are obviously in caring for somebody if you're a part of medical staff. That doesn't mean that you're not allowed to wear a mask, obviously, but it's more a case of we need to reserve these masks for the people that really need them, not the people that are sitting at home on their couches. So just to reiterate, we'll also have a link at the bottom of this podcast to the World Health Organization's advice regarding masks. Just to reiterate, this is not just Ryan spouting stuff off. This is legitimate information from the World Health Organization.
So Brendan, can I jump in there with one more thing?
Yes.
There's been some really interesting initiatives globally which have shown that wearing masks can really make a difference, but people don't need to wear the N5 respirators to stay safe. And the Czech Republic and a couple of other countries around the world have put together really cool drives. So even if people are making their own masks and protecting their face with buffs or something that is going to cover their mouth and stop them from potentially spreading the virus, it's making a big, big difference. We're all under lockdown at the moment, so that mitigates the chance of us interacting with lots and lots of people. But if I look at what happened in China after lockdown, a lot of people have started wearing them as a precautionary measure. Mm. However, at the moment, we really need to preserve all of our efforts and all available supplies, particularly on the respirators, to go to the medical professionals.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Thanks for the clarity, Ryan. I appreciate that. So just to kind of, could you give us an idea of how many masks have been donated to the health department?
Sure. So we brought in, initially we committed to 500,000 units as a starting order with the factories. Uh-huh. And the idea was to pre-sell as many as we could off our websites so that we could justify additional supply. And understanding the market demand through our sites has really helped us to ramp up the procurement for additional masks. So this week we went ahead and processed an order for another 1 million, which will be shipping early next week.
Wow.
And of the first batch that have come in, we've pre-sold in the region of 330,000 masks, which means that we're in a position where there's about 33,000 of the 1 million that we want to donate, which have already been raised.
Oh, wow.
So it's a big task. We're about 3.3% of the way there, but not bad going, assuming that we haven't had any of the stock physically land in the country yet. So I'm really encouraged by the belief and support of the South African people and really hope that this will continue to gain momentum.
So I've heard that you guys don't just stock masks. So I've actually seen your website. You also sell an infrared... An infrared thermometer. Are there plans to bring other medical equipment into the country?
Sure. And maybe before I jump in there, I just want to commend our procurement and compliance team, who've been absolutely incredible, from the people in China to my partner, Craig, who's been working around the clock to try and ensure that we're getting the best available products. We're looking at every possible option. So, yes, the infrared thermometers are coming in. We've placed an order for our first 1,000 units, which many of them have already been sold. And the reason why those are important is at the entrance to buildings and offices all over the world, they've started introducing thermometer testing. And it's a very quick and easy way of establishing if somebody is demonstrating symptoms by quickly checking their temperature. Mm-hmm. So we've brought these in and we'll continue to ramp up that supply as the corporates require them. And the idea is that you could have somebody, a security guard, at the entrance of every shopping center or business to be able to supply them. In addition to that, we are looking at a couple of other products, including PPE suits, which are the medical and surgical gowns that people wear to try and keep them protected from any splashes or diseases. Mm-hmm. And the N95 or the KN95, which is the Chinese standard of those medical grade masks, we're looking at those as well. But those, of course, will be made available only to the medical professionals.
Absolutely. Ryan, this is all fantastic. I'm really glad that we had this chat. It's really inspiring to hear a big company such as yours getting so involved. And like the pivots that you guys have made and the stuff that you guys have done so far in such a short space of time, because I think it's pertinent for folks to remember, even though March felt like 50 years long, it's only been, less than a week since we went into lockdown. So the turnaround time from this has been absolutely fantastic. So, Ryan, I just want to ask, where can folks go, especially the big corporates that want to, and those that are rendering essential services, where can they go and purchase masks or order masks from Syntec?
Sure. So, obviously, just a reminder, if you're not sick, and you're not a medical professional, just stick to the medical grade masks. Don't buy any of the respirators. And if you do know of availability of those, or you've got availability, donate them to a hospital or somewhere where those masks can be used. From us, we're able to assist with all the medical equipment, including masks and thermometers. And the website is medical.syntec.co.za. Brendan, if you can share that on the podcast, that'll be great. The price at the moment is 14 Rand, including VAT, a mask, and that is sold as we're selling them in cartons of 2,000 units. So that's a total investment of 28,000 Rand, including VAT. We are able to function during lockdown. We are supplying, and as soon as the stock physically lands in the country, we are processing orders in the chronological order that they were placed. So for any corporates that want for themselves or would like to donate a mask, a box of masks to the hospital or to the Department of Health, they can do so on our website. We have a payment gateway set up and all of that is available. There's also a dedicated team from Syntech that's able to assist with any queries if there are any. And remember that for every mask order that we get, Syntech is pledging an additional 10% as a donation to the Department of Health, so we can really make a difference to the people that need them.
Fantastic. And is there any way that, like, somebody like myself, ordinary citizen, is there a way that we can help Syntech get these masks out to people?
So we're looking at a couple of cool initiatives, and I'd love your ideas. Perhaps you can get some comments from your listeners of how we can make a difference. I know that 28,000 Rand is a large sum of money for an individual to invest. So we hope to have a additional donation where people can pledge some money towards a box, and I think that'll hopefully go live towards the end of the week. If there's any other ideas or there's any NGOs that could that are interested in getting involved, and we can assist companies in being able to claim their tax deductions for donating, we're really excited about meeting any of them. And then I think listeners or anybody spreading the word and just making sure that there is availability, there are companies that are bringing them in, and to get behind us, to trust that we are honorable and we've got a 17-year reputation of delivering honest business to the market. I really hope that people can trust, invest, and help us to continue to bring these masks in.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Ryan. I really appreciate it. And I'm sure we all appreciate the work that you and Syntech are doing. As I've said multiple times, the turnaround on this has been absolutely fantastic from your guys' side. And it's at a time where we all need to work together, and you guys are definitely doing that. Thank you so much for coming and chatting to us, Ryan. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brendan.
Have a lovely day and stay safe.
Goodbye.
Bye. Syntech is providing an affordable supply of medical masks to you, the private sector, so that they can be donated or distributed to people within your network. For every box of 2,000 masks you buy from us, we will donate an additional 10% to the Department of Health. We are calling on the private sector to join the drive and give medical workers in South Africa the protection they sorely need. Find out more at medical.syntech.co.za. Awesome. And thanks so much to Ryan Martin for having a chat to us about what Syntech is doing as regards COVID-19. We'll have links to everything he discussed, including ways that you can order masks if you are a company that wants to donate a box of masks to healthcare workers in South Africa. I'm sure that would be very much appreciated and would go a long way to helping fight this disease. We'll have links to that at the bottom of this post. But I think that is going to be it from us for this week, right, guys? Yeah, unless anybody wants to add anything else.
Stay inside, please.
Yeah.
Stay home.
If you are not rendering an essential service, you should be staying inside. Or if you are not going to get food or seek medical attention, stay inside. The latest figures that we got this week, show that the amount of infections does seem to be slowing down. That's just one day of data, though, so we will await for more information today being the 2nd of April. But 1st of April, we actually saw the increase of infections drop. So it seems that the lockdown is working, but it only works if we all stay inside. So everybody stay at home and stay safe, wash your hands, and yeah. I guess that's going to be it from us for this week, ladies and gentlemen. From myself, Brendan Lotz, cheerio, from Clinton Matos.
Bye, everybody.
And from Robin Chetty. Cheers. We'll see you next week.